Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and that the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Today's chaplain is Reverend Paul Rogers from Minneapolis, and following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
First, a word from Psalm 145. The eyes of all wait upon you, O Lord, and you give them food in due season. You open your hand and satisfy the desire of every living creature. Let us pray. During recent days, the eyes of all in Minnesota have been upon this building, O God, upon the Senate, the House, and the Governor. And we know that the desires of all citizens have not been and cannot be met. So today we acknowledge that the senators and staff have desires and needs of their own. We pray that they be satisfied. These final hours of session are due season for energy, wisdom, and perseverance. Open your hand and feed them. We pray that these men and women be honored for their commitment to the people of our state and respected for their efforts, divergent as they may be. We pray for rest from their weariness, for time with family and friends who have been neglected during this session. And finally, let your presence be a blessing. Surround these women and men with grace and peace today and always. Amen.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Hahn, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Kunin, Cruz, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Scoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Uyghur, Wolf.
A quorum is present. Moving to the ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. We will take up one conference committee report under motions and resolutions. Senate file 1653, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 1653 now be adopted and that the bill be passed as amended by the conference committee.
To that motion, Senator Peterson.
Members, this bill came back from conference committee with just one minor change. As you may recall, we added the fire sprinkler provision to this bill that would have prohibited the building code from adopting fire sprinklers for single-family home new construction. We went into conference committee and removed that provision and then added also some a bill from Senator Miller relating to the Department of Labor and some technical languages that they needed. It's a largely an agency bill and non-controversial. This body's voted on all these issues previously in favor, and I would encourage your support this afternoon as well. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senator Peterson's motion. Senator Roebling.
Thank you. I appreciate the provisions that are remaining in the conference report, but I do want to express regret that the sprinkler ban issue has been removed from it. I understand why. I am hoping that in the future some effort can be made to work with the governor's office in a very real and not that that didn't happen this time, but I think this is such an important issue, this issue of requiring sprinklers in all new home construction, that it does need a lot more discussion and we have to look at the real costs. I think they are significant, and we have to weigh that against the value of what it can do, especially in light of the fact that not all fires are best suppressed by water, and we should be looking at other avenues as well. And so I'm hoping that in the future those who remain here will continue to work on that issue.
Further discussion, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. We've had the sprinkler or a bill with sprinklers attached to it, I think, a couple of times this session. I think there's always been a strong sense that this was the wrong direction to go for the home building industry of Minnesota. And I would only suggest to the Commissioner of Labor and Industry and the committee that he is looking to for guidance on this that I think if you simply look at the votes of the legislature, there is a sense of legislative intent that exists, and I hope that the commissioner and his advisory council understand that as they move forward their proceedings. So thank you, Madam President.
Further discussion on the Peterson motion. Seeing none, Senator Peterson renews his motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 1653 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give Senate File 1653 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1653, a bill for an act relating to labor and industry, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1653. the roll. With 37 ayes and 15 nays, bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we'll move to the confirmation calendar. We have several confirmations we'll be taking up. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the report from the Committee on Education reported April 18, 2012, pertaining to appointments to the Board of the Perfect Center for Arts Education be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Olson.
I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Olson.
I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Education reported April 18, 2012, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment of the following members of the Board of the Perfect Center for Arts Education: Peter Adolfson for a term that expires on January 6, 2014, Barry Amadeo for a term expiring on January 5, 2015, Janine Carey for a term expiring on January 5, 2015, William Crutcher for a term expiring on January 5, 2015, Stephen Daly, effective June 17th, 2009, for a term expiring on January 7th, 2013. Ardith Gallant, for a term expiring on January 5th, 2015. Roberta Jones, for a term expiring on January 7th, 2013. Todd Lillienquist, for a term expiring on January 7th, 2013. Pierce McNally, for a term expiring on January 5th, 2015. Nancy Paddleford, for a term expiring on January 5th, 2015, and Alex Plekish, for a term expiring on January 6th, 2014.
Discussion to that motion.
I'd like to
Senator Olson.
A couple summary points. Peter Adolfson is a current member of the Perpich Board being reappointed. Mary Amadeo is the Executive Director of the Rochester Arts Council. Janine Carey is a Library Information Media Specialist at Hibbing Community College. William Crutcher, retired from General Mills, is their Assistant General Counsel and Chief Environmental Counsel in 2004. Stephen Daly is the Director of Operations at Micro Solutions. Ardith Gallant, Roberta Jones, and Todd Lillienquist are current board members who are being reappointed. Pierce A. McNally is a senior attorney at Gray Plant Moody. And Dr. Nancy Paddleford has over 30 years' experience teaching as a piano teacher and instructor, an assistant professor, as an associate professor, and as a professor. And Alex Plekish is a vice president and divisional manager of Folio Institutional. So I would recommend their confirmation.
Discussion to that motion. Seeing none, Senator Olson renews her motion that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Education reported April 18, 2012, the Senate giving its advice now consent to the confirmations and appointments of. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Olson.
I move that the report from the Committee on Education, reported April 18th, 2012, pertaining to the appointments to the Board of the Minnesota State Academies, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Olson.
I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Olson.
I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Education reported April 18th, 2012, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to the and to confirm the appointment of the following two members of the Board of the Minnesota State Academies: Martha Amundson for a term expiring in January 5th, 2015, and Sunny Wasilowski for a term expiring on January 5th, 2015.
Discussion of that motion. Senator Olson.
Martha Amundson is a special education director that works for the Minneapolis School District, and Sunny Wasilowski is a deaf community member and a graduate of the Minnesota State Academy for the Deaf.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Olson renews her motion. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Olson.
Madam President, I move that the report from the Committee on Education reported April 18th, 2012, pertaining to the appointments to the Board of School Administrators, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Olson.
I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Olson.
I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Education reported April 18th, 2012, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment of the following individuals to the Board of School Administrators: Kimberly Hartung for a term expiring January 5th, 2015. Denise Kapler for a term expiring on January 5th, 2015. Penny Kodrick for a term expiring on January 4th, 2016. Mary Mackby for a term expiring on January 5th, 2015. And Louise Senden for a term expiring on January 4th, 2016.
Discussion of that motion, Senator Olson.
Kimberly Hartung is the higher education administrator and assistant professor at Hamline University. Denise Kapler represents classroom teachers. She's a mathematics teacher at the Washington Technology Middle School. Penny Kodrick is a special education representative and is director of special services at Edina Public Schools. Mary Mackby is the secondary principal member and is a principal at Central Senior High School. And Louise Senden is a public member. She's a lobbyist for the Minneapolis Committee of 13 and has over 30 years of experience in public education.
Further discussion to Senator Olson's motion. Seeing none, Senator Olson renews her motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. And the final group of people to be confirmed are for the Board of Teaching. I move that the report from the Committee on Education reported April 27th, 2012, pertaining to appointments to the Board of Teaching, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion fails. Senator Olson.
I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Olson.
I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Education reported April 27th, 2012, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment of the following five people to the Board of Teaching: Aaron Azer for a term expiring on January 4th, 2016. John Bellingham for a term expiring on January 5th, 2015. Lisa Covington Clarkson for a term expiring on January 5th, 2015. Michael Larson for a term expiring on January 5th, 2015. And Karen Palman for a term expiring on January 5th, 2015.
To that motion, Senator Olson.
Aaron Azer is a school board member and has over 7 years of experience as a public school teacher and is recently elected member of the Roseville Area School Board. John Bellingham is a classroom teacher member John Billingham has 25 years of experience as a public school teacher. And Dr. Lisa Covington Clarkson is the higher education representative and is assistant professor of mathematics at the University of Minnesota. Michael Larson is a classroom teacher member and has approximately 14 years of experience as a public school teacher. And Karen Palman is also a classroom teacher member, is an English teacher at Central High School. So I would renew my motion.
Further discussion? Senator Olson renews her motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Perry.
Madam President, I move that the report from the Committee on State Government Innovation and Veterans, reported February 16, 2012, pertaining to the appointment of Commissioner of Administration, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Perry.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Perry.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on State Government Innovation and Veterans, reported February 16, 2012, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Commissioner of Administration, Spencer Kronk, for a term expiring on January 5th, 2015.
To that motion, Senator Perry.
Madam President and members, I've been so impressed with the workings of Commissioner Kronk since I've met him, the way he's taken on some of the reforms that were passed through Senate File 1047 last year, data analytics programs. I can tell that he truly wants to find as much efficiency in government, and that is to the betterment of the citizens of this state. And I would so ask for everyone to make sure that we confirm him.
Further discussion, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Perry, for your recommendation to support Commissioner Kronk for confirmation. As Commissioner of Administration, I just wanted to take this opportunity to echo Senator Perry's observations of Commissioner Kronk. I think he has been a breath of fresh air in state government and in what's often known as a back-of-the-house agency, that he's brought a wealth of experience from his past professional lives, and glad to have him back in Minnesota after he spent some time in some other places, learning his craft, learning his trade. Like Senator Perry said, he's sought innovation, he sought efficiency. I think he's handled himself in a very difficult, contentious period of time that we've had. Certainly handled the many things that Senator Perry has thrown at him with grace and aplomb, and managed to keep Senator Perry as a friend. So I think that speaks well to his skills. I think he'll serve the state of Minnesota as an enterprise, the state of Minnesota as a state, and the Commissioner of Agency of Admin very well. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam President. I, too, rise to share my support and endorsement for Senator Perry's motion. Senator Perry, thank you for making that recommendation. I, too, have been so impressed with Commissioner Kronk and want to express my appreciation for his willingness to embrace the efforts that we have put forward to make sure that we are reforming the business of state government. And in particular, this year, he worked with our new reform committee as we tried to identify one or two key things that could put us on a path forward towards the redesign of state government, and then helped shepherd that policy into legislation that could be passed and signed by the governor. So I look forward to the contributions of Commissioner Kronk in the years to come and look forward to working with him in our future.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I would like to add my support for Commissioner Kronk. He has worked on many initiatives that have been important to many of us in this body, things that are important to all Minnesotans. Last year, he worked with us on our data analytics, which would be saving about $400 million over the next biennium, smart buildings, fleet management, Medicaid, tax fraud detection, prevention, and fraud prevention. and most recently, he's been very helpful in our efforts to restore this magnificent capital. So I add my hearty support and recommendation to Commissioner Kronk.
Further discussion on Senator Perry's motion? Seeing none, Senator Perry renews his motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senchum.
Madam President, we did have another bill that we're going to special order. It's probably not quite ready. We need some more people in the chamber, so I think we're going to hold on that and recess until the call of the chair. Maybe just a reminder, members, if you plan on retiring, or even if you don't, in case you do in the next 24 hours, you might think about a retirement speech. In addition to that, we've got the Stadium Conference Committee working. We're not quite sure exactly when their report's going to be ready. We would have a Tax Conference Committee report available to us later in the day, but I think for now, the times are so indefinite, why don't we recess until the call of the chair? And in addition to that, I would say that we will try to give through emails everyone and say a 1 hour notice in with respect to when we're going to reconvene, and that may be the best I can do right now. In addition to that, I would upon recess, request that the Rules Committee meet 1/2 hour from now, so at about 2:10? 3:10. What is it? Okay, 3:10. And we've got some business there that we need to take care of quickly. So at this time, Madam Chair, I would move that we recess. Rules Committee meet at 3:10. And to the call of the chair with respect to reconvening, and we'll give you a 1 hour notice.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, can Senator Senjum give us any kind of a ballpark? Are we anticipating around 4 o'clock or around 7 o'clock or
Senator
9 o'clock?
I can give you a clue, Senator Latz, and that would be, Madam President, Senator Latz, that kind of be looking for the Stadium Conference Committee and when that concludes and when the report goes forward relative to that activity. We want to wait for that. In addition to that, upon maybe conclusion of the House and their tax bill, we'll take that up. But it's just so hard to know at this point, you know, how long that's going to take in terms of deliberation. But they would be the indicators as far as when to reconvene.
Senator Higgins.
Madam President, some of the retirees today are going to be inviting you to a little get-together later this afternoon, so check your email.
Senator Senjum moves the Senate do recess to the call of the President. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are in recess.
Madam President.
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we revert back to messages from the House. Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file, Senate File 1856, a bill for an act relating to lawful gambling. There has been appointed as such a committee under the Pars, Creasel, Lanning, and Morrow. Senate File Number 1856 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Secretary, read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation and report of the Conference Committee on Senate File Number 1653 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee. So adopted. Senate File 1653, a bill for an act relating to labor and industry. Senate File 1653 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albany A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Senjum. Senator Senjum, there's a resolution at the desk.
Madam President, I move the resolution be adopted.
Secretary will read the resolution.
Introduction of Senate Resolution Number 177, a Senate resolution relating to conduct of Senate business during the interim between sessions.
And members, I understand that they were distributed on your desks, so you should have number 177 in front of you. Oops. Senator Senjum renews his motion on Senate Resolution 177. All in. Oh, we have to have a roll call on this. The Secretary will take
Madam
the roll.
Madam President.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, will Senator Senjum yield for a question?
Senator Senjum will yield. Senator Latz.
Senator Senjum, can you tell us what, if anything, this resolution has to say about incurring litigation costs during the interim?
Senator Senjum?
Madam President, Senator Latch, we had a discussion about this in rules today. I don't think it's reflected necessarily the language of our conversation in the bill. We addressed the matter of, pardon me, it is, I'm sorry. What we did on lines 231 and 232, we included after costs, including the costs of legal defense, and they would be authorized by the Committee of Administration, pardon me, by the Committee of Rules Administration, and I think that was it, except for Senator Latz, except in addition to that, while not reflected in here, the Rules Committee pre-authorized up to $50,000 for pending legal expenses.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Senjum, does that mean that under the language in lines 2.31 and 2.32 that any litigation expenses that cumulatively exceed $50,000, that they will have to go to the Committee on Rules and Administration for authorization before payment is made?
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, Senator Latz, I think up to $50,000 in excess now, according to the language of $50,000, we would have to come back and get approval for any additional expenditures.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, I have the A3 amendment, or the 43 amendment, 40-3 amendment to the resolution.
Senator Cohen offers the 40-3 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Cohen moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 177 as follows. Page 3, line 7, after chair, insert, this is the A3 amendment.
And Senator Cohen, if we could just wait a minute, they're being distributed. It's not online, and I think everybody should see it.
No, not.
To the amendment, Senator Cohen.
Madam President, would move the amendment. And obviously, Madam President, as members of the Rules Committee know, we had a lot of discussion about this issue today in the Rules Committee, went through a number of machinations as to what language would work. And I think there was consensus on the committee that there's the need for transparency with how we handle these matters and how the obviously, the particular situation the Senate now finds itself in needs to be dealt with quite carefully. And Madam President and members who don't serve on the Rules Committee, again, there was a lot of discussion about how this would work, what would happen, who's going to authorize payment, and so on. And so, subsequent to the committee, a couple of us had some discussion about the language that you see in front of you that makes it very, very clear that at least relative to any litigation costs, it has to be approved by the Committee on Rules Administration. The concern we expressed was on lines 3.6, 3.7, if you have a contract in excess of $10,000, the approval is only by the chair of the Rules Committee and by another member designated by the chair. I had raised a couple of questions about that language in the committee. And I think it was made clear that historically that other member has been the minority leader. That's not been specified, but I think everybody on the committee understood that that's been the case. But because of the unusual situation the Senate finds itself in, I think this language that I'm presenting by way of the A3 amendment is language that makes things that much more transparent and makes it clear that we have the entirety of the committee making the decision on what happens. And certainly as you look through the closing resolution, and a lot of the language is the same, most language is the same as to what we do year to year, we do give authority to the Secretary of the Senate. We give authority to the Chairman of the Rules Committee. But I think in unusual situations, it's quite appropriate that we give that authority for approval to the full committee. And certainly, as we've proceeded during the course of the session, we've tried to be very careful as to what happens, how it happens. But this provides the transparency, I think, that the public would look for when we have volatility, whether it be a stadium conference committee, whether it be an omnibus tax bill, or in this instance, a very serious matter that's received attention and a very serious matter that's been dealt with, I think, well by the Rules Committee. This provides the transparency. I'd ask for the support of members on this amendment to the closing resolution. And Madam President, I would ask for a roll call on the matter.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Senator Senjum?
Just briefly, Madam President, lines 231 and 232 talk to the fact that litigation expenses need to be authorized by the Committee of Rules and Administration. It just does seem to me that what Senator Cohen is suggesting here is frankly almost duplicative of what we have in the policy language already, the resolution language. So We talked about this at length, Madam President, today, and I think we were content leaving that meeting, that what we have in the resolution as it was amended, and that is to suggest that on line 231, we added the including the costs of legal defense adequately addressed, I think, in my opinion, Senator Cohen's concerns.
Senator Dibble.
Madam President, I'd like to request a call of the Senate.
Senate is under call. Senator Dibble.
Madam President, I move that the proceedings of the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, we had this amendment and we considered it fully in the Rules Committee earlier today. In fact, we spent quite a lot of time addressing this issue and found that the resolution as it's been amended in that committee really does provide for all of the transparency that we as members and the general public would expect. Full transparency. Nothing but full transparency. And the custom and usage of the Senate, as we have learned through the course of hearings on this resolution, is that the tradition is that if an expense is over $10,000, that expense is approved by the chair of the Rules Committee, the majority leader, and the minority leader. And so they get approval, and they certainly have the ability to disclose that information. In addition, members, Senator Sundrum is correct that there are two places where this resolution deals with that to provide the transparency to the public that they deserve. On page 2, lines 231 and 232, the Secretary of the Senate may pay election and litigation costs, as we have amended it, to include the costs of legal defense as authorized by the Committee on Rules and Administration. And in fact, the Rules Committee actually moved to authorize that kind of transaction, did that today. Secondly, members, there's further protection in this document, as Senator Sundrum pointed out, on line 3.6. Any contracts in excess of $10,000 shall be approved by the chair of the Committee on Rules and Administration and another member designated by the chair. So we have both authorization by the committee and approval by the chair and the minority leader, not just by custom and usage, but by virtue of this resolution. And so when this body adopts this resolution, we will have adopted a dual method of full transparency of all of the costs related to legal defense and other significant costs. And members, I appreciated the fact that we had a thorough conversation about this in the Rules Committee, and this amendment that's now being offered on the Senate floor was deemed in that committee to be unnecessary because we took the action to amend the resolution and adopt it and send it up to the Senate floor for full consideration. So I would ask members to defer to the Rules Committee. We did our work. We did a very good job of ensuring transparency, full disclosure, and notice as would be expected.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, just for a second. The concern I had this afternoon, and I think the reason for this language, is there is the degree of ambiguity with 3.6 and 3.7 compared to the language on page 2. And I think this provides the clarification and deals with the ambiguity that I did find bothersome this afternoon.
Further discussion on the A3, Senator Ortman.
Members, I hope you will vote no on the amendment as being unnecessary.
Secretary will take the roll on the A3 amendment. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 30 ayes and 35 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the Senate Resolution 177. Secretary will take the roll on Senate Resolution 177. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 55 ayes and 10 nays, the Senate resolution is passed. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Senjum.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that House File Number 322, Number 66 on General Orders be made a special order for immediate consideration.
Senator Senjum has designated a special order. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I have House File 322. House File 322 deals with the presumptive time of parenting, and members, on the Senate side, there was not a whole lot of appetite to deal with major changes here, although the House file itself came over with 18 pages of changes that deal with this section of family law. Members, we tried to keep it simple on the Senate side. The appetite was to move a piece of this forward, although I would argue that a 50-50 presumptive time actually decreases the amount of consternation and fighting between parents. But what House File 322 does is moves the presumptive time from 25% to 35%. Members, we did not do any changes in the child support. We did not do any changes in the current standard, which is everything decided in the best interest of the child. We think this is an equity issue, but we think it's a very complex subject, and so we try to keep it, again, very simple, though we think that in this whole section of law, it becomes a win-lose negotiation if you don't move it at some day to that 50-50 presumptive time. So members, that's all we're dealing with here is changing the 25 to 35, and in fact, members, to deal with potential implications in terms of budget, we put part of it in 2013, part of it in 2014. There is a fiscal note, but members, 10 years of being here, and it's interesting that when we change a number on a page, all the bureaucracy of government will tell you it costs a lot of money for that change. And the last four states that made that change showed only a small uptick in what the courts were dealing with for a short period of time. I hope you can support this small movement. We're keeping it simple and just keeping this bill moving forward as people work on some of the issues and more research becomes available on the topic.
Discussion of House File 322. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Jungbauer yield for question?
Senator Jungbauer will yield. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Jungbauer, you mentioned that there's a fiscal note. Could you just give us some idea of the cost that this would be? Because it appears to me that if you're allowing a different presumption in child support, that there will be a lot of people going back to the court system to get their settlements reviewed and perhaps changed. So that would be a burden on the court system. Could you give me an idea of what those fiscal notes will be?
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator McGuire, yes, in what we're looking at is fiscal year 14, the estimated is $532,000, and fiscal year 15, just over a million. And again, Madam President and members, I would argue that though there could be that uptick, and there will be people certainly asking for change orders, that every time the court has a new change based on case law, every time we see government agencies coming out with new rules based on rulemaking, they seem to be able to absorb that, and I would argue that certainly since it will only be a temporary uptick, the courts could handle it.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam President. So this will be a tax increase then if there's a fiscal note like that. So you're raising taxes in those years then to pay for this bill. So this bill has some tails that are going to be caused, and those tails are going to have to be paid by a tax increase. So, Madam President, I oppose this bill for a number of reasons. And I just want to make members aware that this bill will increase the taxes so that they can pay for those court costs in future years. But this is a bill that sets up a presumption that is going to be unworkable for many families. There's already an ability for the courts to determine parenting time in the best interest of the child. And this one sets a presumption that then sets off the court's ability to really rule in the best interest of a child. And so I think what we really need to be doing here in our Senate chamber is to really be paying attention to what is good for our children and not set these presumptions in law when the courts can already determine the time frame that parents can have their kids that is in their own best interest. So I encourage members to vote no on this bill because it's not necessary. The courts already have the ability to do what's best.
Senator Latz.
Madam President and members, just to piggyback a little bit on what Senator McGuire said, the total fiscal note for the next biennium is over $1.5 million. So it creates some tails here. What the fiscal note doesn't cover is the additional attorney's fees that individual families are going to incur as they relitigate orders of the court. And what it does reflect in some sense is the staggered effective dates, which is the reason why you don't have a fiscal note in the current biennium, but it loads it up into the next biennium. But the staggered effective dates also means that one group of families or families that are breaking up are subject to one set of rules from July 1, 2013 to July 1, 2014, while another group of families in that same period of time are subject to a different set of rules and will be prohibited from going into court to seek a modification to reflect the change that's proposed here. So I think there's a fundamental unfairness just in that little bit of ledger domain intended to avoid an immediate fiscal impact. But members, I'm no expert on family law. I don't pretend to be. I don't practice in the field. We had hours and hours of hearings in Judiciary Committee on the topic. And we heard from people who are experts in the family law field. And so I want to share their views with you. And these are organizations that represent lawyers on both sides of these custody disputes, or in the parenting time disputes, representing dads and moms. The Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers opposes this change. The Minnesota Association for Justice opposes this change. The Minnesota State Bar Association Family Law Section opposes this change. And notably, for the protection of women in abusive relationships and children who are subject to those abusive relationships, the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women opposes this change. So I'd like you to consider some of the points that I received by email this morning from Attorney Bruce Kennedy, prepared with the assistance of two mediators. He's the legislative chair of the family law section of the Minnesota State Bar Association. Hennepin County adopted an early case management system in family court in 2001, designed and intended to bring parties early in the process into a mediation and problem-solving approach rather than to have them litigate these issues. They have had great success with mediation and early neutral evaluation, so that rather than cases going to final decision by a judge, as only about 5% of the cases do, where this presumption would have the most impact, 95% or more of the cases are resolved through discussion between the parties. That early case management approach has been picked up in other metro counties and is now starting to spread statewide. So Mr. Kennedy says, shouldn't we give this early case management a chance before changing the legal presumptions that will only cause parties to be inflexible in their negotiations? Then Mr. Kennedy goes on to list the circumstances in which a 35% overnight quota won't work. I'll tell you, 35% overnight quota means five overnights in a two-week period. Five overnights in a two-week period. So we're not just talking weekends. We're talking weekdays, school nights. So let me tell you what he has to say. These are situations where that would be unworkable. One parent travels a lot. One parent works long hours or hours that are incompatible with child supervision, such as 4 p.m. to midnight. One parent is involved in a lot of personal activities which he or she is unwilling to sacrifice. For example, softball. One parent has chemical dependency or mental health issues. One parent is not as bonded with the child or has attachment issues. One parent does not have a knack for basic nurturing skills. One parent has nurturing skills but does not sustain the energy to carry on without a break. One parent has a new significant other who perhaps has children as well, and the environment is difficult for the child. One parent is clearly going to outsource the care of the child during his or her time to a friend, relative, significant other, or a babysitter. One parent wants to live elsewhere. One parent cannot set limits. Child needs a consistent routine. Child wants a home base. Child is nursing or an early attachment phase. Child has educational, mental, or physical health challenges better met by one parent. Now, members, this bill doesn't specify what would overcome the legal presumption of 35%. But these are all the factors that a judge, considering input from the custody evaluator any guardians ad litem that are involved, input from the parties, depositions, others, all the evidence that would be taken in a family court proceeding, none of which we have available to us here tonight for any individual case. Mr. Kennedy concludes, there would be many instances where a minimum quota of overnights would be very difficult, harmful to the child, or impossible. The court should not be under a legislative mandate to order a specific percentage of time. Members, I received a letter. Actually, I think every member of the Senate received this letter. And ordinarily, I wouldn't be citing a legislator from another state as a reference, except this particular legislator, Republican Senator Joni Cutler from South Dakota. She's vice chair of their Senate Judiciary Committee. She also is a family law specialist. She has won the American Jurisprudence Award in Family Law, the South Dakota Attorney of the Year Award, and she's presently the chair of the National Conference of State Legislatures Committee on Law and Justice. And so I cite to you her views on this, which I think are important for you to consider. The legislative policy should not treat children as property to be equally divided among warring parties. Legislation that promotes a one-size-fits-all approach denies the protection of the best interests of the child standard that presently exists within the law. And members, let me highlight for you what this means. I'll take a common analogy here, a football field with 100 yards, and you move from the goal line on the left out to the 35-yard line, and the goal yard from the right out to the 35-yard line, you've only got 30 yards in between those two points, which would be the playing field under this legislative presumption, this statutory mandate for a presumption. Under current law, there's 50 yards in between, 25% for each parent, 50% in between for the court to fashion an appropriate order that reflects the circumstances of that individual family. The members, you will get, and you've probably heard from individual parents that have felt like they got a raw deal from the judge that heard their case. And I can't stand here today and say they didn't get a raw deal. But I can say I'm not in a position to second guess it. I wasn't there in the courtroom. You weren't there in the courtroom. You didn't read the volumes of paperwork that were submitted. You didn't hear the testimony yourself. That's what we trust our judges to do. And there will be individual circumstances where people individually feel like they got the raw deal. The question is whether we should stand in the place of the judge and pretend that we have a better answer for that individual family. Senator Cutler goes on, the courts make these decisions on all of the facts and circumstances presented to them based on the legal standard known as the best interests of the child. All states use that standard. This requires facts and evidence to show what is in the child's best interests on a case-by-case basis. Departure from that standard is flawed in theory and in practice for children and families. Once parents are no longer cooperative and must rely on the order of the court, the analysis of each child's particular circumstances provides the information upon which to base the structure a child must have to ensure that children in these situations have a healthy environment. Let me emphasize this. When the parents are cooperative and can work it out themselves, they don't need these state guidelines. When the parents are uncooperative and they're doing battle, it shouldn't be the interest of the parent that's most important, which is what we'd be putting in statute with this bill. It should be the best interests of the child. That should be the touchstone. As Senator Cutler says, an artificial imposition of parenting time not based on an analysis of a child's individual circumstances but instead by legislative action as a policy that will erode the best interests of the child standard. Then those cases would have to be litigated based on a presumption within the law, adding unnecessary expense for the families. And members, I'm going to highlight just one other note for you. And this email was forwarded to me from a constituent in Senator Thompson's district who has had personal experience in this area. One with a former spouse that was had a very bitter custody battle, and one with a current spouse who has a former spouse where it worked out well. The adults that can make shared custody work will make it work. However, if you force kids to be shared with parents that can't work together for any reason, the kids will always lose. You cannot make a decision based on what is fair for the adults. Allow judges to make decisions on what is best for the kids. Do not assume parents will work it out. And his closing statement in this letter, government cannot fix everything. Sometimes you have to trust people. Members, I encourage you to trust the people that our system has entrusted to review and make these decisions when the parents can't work it out. The judges in the courtroom, subject to all the protections in the judicial system, I ask you to defeat this bill.
I have Senator Skoy next.
Well, thank you, Madam President. And members, I drafted an amendment to this bill, and I'm not going to offer it, not because there's an agreement that Senator Jungbauer made publicly that he was going to table the bill if any amendments went on, because I didn't serve on any of those committees, and this is my opportunity to impact the bill. But I do have an issue that I want to talk about. And the issue is about a grandmother and her son who had a custodial parents, and the mother who has a long history of drug and alcohol abuse that's not been treated is residing with a registered offender. And now, if this bill is passed, they will have to rebut this presumption. And the mother is seeking visitation rights on the weekends. And they're concerned about the son and the grandson. So I drafted an amendment that this presumption didn't apply if they were residing with a predator offender. I'm not going to offer it because I guess there are better ways to solve this problem, but it does demonstrate some of the issues that revolve around this very emotional, complicated problem. And as Senator Latz said, I hope that we are acting in the best interest of the children. And I'm going to contact the county attorney and see if we can get child protection through the CHIPS program. I don't know a lot about it, but I imagine I'm going to have an opportunity to learn this. But this presumption that these parents are going to have to rebut in order to do what's best for their kids, I think is problematic, and I hope you all consider that when you vote tonight. And so I'm not going to offer this A7 amendment, Senator Jungbauer, but I have talked to Senator Limber and other senators and staff, and I think next year, for those of you that are serving and working on the committee with jurisdiction here, this is going to be an issue you should continue to wrestle with.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President, members, and I was trying to write things down from Senator Latz line by line so I could rebut them, but he went on farther than I had paper on my desk. Certainly, members, we can think of exceptions to every rule, and we can go through that list of exceptions. We're lucky, members, if we can come up with a law that fits 80% of circumstances. I would contend to you that parenting, especially shared parenting, is challenging, and it's going to require sacrifice, But when we go into situations, and sometimes, again, there's exceptions, we don't know the kind of situation we're going into in terms of marriages and relationships. Sometimes we just don't know, and that is an exception. But people need to think about that. And whenever we have anything on the books short of that 50-50, if you go into a situation where it's presumed 50-50, you're on an even starting line on both sides, there's going to be less violence, less issues in terms of starting the conversation because you're on equal ground. When we're at 25-75, which is the way courts do interpret this, then somebody's fighting for that 75%, and that means you have a win-lose situation. Win-lose situations get people angry. And when people think they get a raw deal on top of that already anger because they got the short end of it, yes, these kind of things cause more violence than they would ever fix. The other thing that really upsets me is when we talk about these overnights, and we always talk about them. The opposition to this bill talks about overnights, these five overnights in 2 weeks, as though that's the way it has to be implemented. There is no way that it has to be five overnights in 2 weeks. What this does for a lot of families is this allows for that percentage to be carried into summer vacations or other times off for vacations for one family member that has that less percentage of time to be able to actually have their children for a longer period of time to build that up over these kind of situations and share some time and have an impact with their children. And the reason we didn't go into the other issues, the reason we didn't go away from the current standards of the best interest of the child is because we still want the court to use that. The reason we didn't open up the child support payments was because many of these parents just want time to impact their children. They want more time to be able to spend with their children, be it the mom or the dad, and that's all they're asking for, and this presumption gives them that opportunity to have more of that time without affecting anything else within this bill, and that's why, members, we kept it very narrow and very minimal compared to what the House was originally looking for, the 18 pages the House was looking for on this subject.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. I debated as to whether to get up and talk about this issue or not, and I finally decided, well, I'm gonna offer you this perspective. Many of you have yourselves been through divorces, or you have talked to somebody who has been through a messy divorce, or you have relatives who have. Let me give you just a little bit different perspective. As a practicing attorney, I look around this chamber, and I would suspect that I probably have at least as much and probably more in the courtroom experience handling divorces and child custody matters than anybody in here. So I'm going to try and give you some perspective of what I have seen in the real world in the courtroom. And I will start out by telling you that the number of cases that we are talking about that this bill addresses is a very, very small percentage. I would estimate 1-6% of the folks who go through a divorce wind up in a bitter custody battle of the type that this bill would address. I want to illustrate or just tell you a real quick story that Senator Bonhoff told in finance, and I hope it's okay if I share this. She said it in finance. But when Senator Bonhoff got a divorce years ago, her and her soon-to-be husband sat down and worked it out, and they decided what was going to be in the best interest of their children. And that kind of mature approach is how parents should do it and most often do handle this kind of a problem. So again, this is a very, very small percentage of cases. The to go from 25% to 35% that this bill is addressing, in my estimation, is not going to have an enormous impact. I think that there will be a spike in litigation, and I think that the fiscal note that was addressed earlier will come into play. But very honestly, the best idea that I've heard on this whole question is a bill that Senator Hall had that he was working on earlier in the session. And that was, what he was trying to do is force parents to go through a parenting class when they had to go through a divorce. And the problem with it was is that it was mandatory and you couldn't get a divorce unless you went through it, and that kind of struck me as having a due process problem. But that's really, in my estimation, the best way to handle this is to try and educate these parents so that they are doing what is in the best interest of the children. And what Senator Latz was trying to outline for you, you know, I agree with much of what Senator Latz has outlined for you. So my fear in going in the direction that we are going, from the 25% to the 35%, is, again, the standard that's always been in play is what is in the best interest of the child. And it feels to me like we are moving in the direction of what do the parents want, as opposed to what's in the best interest of the child. And I guess I would say with that, members, vote however you wish on this matter. I don't think it's going to make an enormous difference. And just keep in mind that I think it's very, very difficult for us to legislate the behavior of a very small percentage of parents who they themselves cannot resolve the question of what is in the best interest of their children. And at that point, we have in place the discretion of the court to answer that question. Thank you, members.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of this piece of legislation. Really, this comes out of an acknowledgement that mothers and fathers are both extremely important to children. And in reality, maximizing the amount of time that a child can spend with their loving, involved parents is what's best for the child. And the courts can see that. We are pushing 10%. This isn't a massive change. We have almost apoplectic response to a 10% change. There's nothing that prevents parents from settling out of court. And maybe if they see you're going to end up really close to 50-50, they'll just do the right thing in the first place. There's nothing in this bill that takes away the best interest presumption. There's nothing that smacks judges down if they don't do this. It simply acknowledges that mothers and fathers are both important in the life of the child. Now, Senator Latz was very concerned about overnights. Really? If you're really concerned about trauma for the child, how about divorce? Divorce has got to be a whole lot harder than trying to figure out overnights. Okay, there are ways that reasonable people can work around this very common sense piece of legislation. They can find a way to make this work. Judges do not have to give an abusive parent custody. They still get to do what's in the best interest of the child. We are making a lot of noise over a very small change. And judges and lawyers need to step back and take a breath and look at family as a very important unit in our society, and mothers and fathers together raising children. study by, I believe it's Kirk, 2012 out of, I believe, California, peer-reviewed study. Children do best when they have maximum exposure to both parents. It's 10%, folks, not a big deal. Vote yes.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, thank you. I agree with Senator Newman that this is a small number of cases, and I also agree with him that we should be trying to do much more to educate parents before divorce to make sure of this. Very concerned about one of the things Senator Jungbauer said. He said that if you start with a 50-50 premise, an equal premise, you can have a lot, you can have less chance that certain parents are get violent. Well, if you have a parent who's getting violent over dispute over parenting time, I don't want to be increasing the time. I'm not sure why that parent should be spending time with the child when they're violent. I think that's not an argument in favor of your bill, Senator Jungbauer. The concern I have is I'd like to have it remain in what we're focusing on now, the best interest of the child. Yes, in many cases, yes, we want to have both parents involved, if they are involved, loving parents. But that's why you need the courts to have the discretion. The less time, as this bill gives, the less variation between the minimum presumption as this bill is increasing and the 50-50 level, the less flexibility the courts have to address the kids' needs. And Senator Latz, I think, pointed out very well a lot of the situations where you need more flexibility. If I was to do anything to make sure you helped the best interest of the child in each case when there is so much variation, we'd make sure we have more time for the courts and the judges and the guardian ad litem and the people who are investigating on behalf of the court to try and make wise decisions in very difficult cases, to make sure they have the time to do it. And as we press more and more on the courts, as this bill would, I think you're making the situations worse. But adding the presumption to 5 days and five overnights in 2 weeks is too much, and I think that's why you have so much strong opposition to it from the people who do practice in this kind of law most. And I guess I just urge the members to reject this bill. I think it's important that we do more to help reduce these number of very difficult cases and to make sure the courts have the time to address them. But give the courts the flexibility. Don't mandate closer and closer to 50-50 when you're admitting yourself that some of these parents are people who have more anger issues and turn violent.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Marty, I want to clarify. I didn't say they have more anger issues. I said the research shows that if you start at 50-50, that is a baseline of equality. So I will start and make myself more clear. 50-50 presumption is a baseline for equality, members. When you feel equal coming into a situation, you don't get angry. You feel equal. When you feel like you're only 25% of the equation and somebody else is 75% of the equation, you have a tendency towards getting angry at that feeling of not being equal coming into the situation. So the research is showing that a basis for equality or a 50-50 presumption gets rid of a lot of that animosity up front, which reduces anger.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. This is a case where we must do what's in the best interest of children, and I don't know if we can figure that out in this legislative body or not. But I have a question as far as just the logistics of this, and I'm wondering if Senator Jungbauer would yield.
Senator Jungbauer will yield. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm curious about the judge allotment, the judicial units, and I'm just trying to understand how adding one judicial unit is going to be allocated. In other words, there would be one additional judicial unit allocated, but of course these cases occur all over the state. And I would just like some clarification on where is this new judicial unit going to be? In what area? What judicial district?
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Nelson. In terms of that allocation, should we allocate, should the future legislators decide that indeed this does bring up enough new work, that this fiscal note is accurate, which I would argue is not accurate, based on what's going on today, our first judicial unit would be allocated in District 1, our second priority would be District 2.
Southeast Metro,
and then Southeast Minnesota, based on the current judicial counts in those areas.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Further question for Senator Jungbauer, if he would yield.
You will yield, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Jungbauer, give me some more clarification on that. What judicial district, then, would the first judicial unit be allocated to, and what judicial district, then, would the next judicial unit be allocated to? Could you give me those judicial district numbers, please?
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President, Senator Nelson. It's not up to the legislature where the allocation goes. It's up to the courts, and I guess it's District 1 and District 3 where the next in line for the allocations due to the caseloads and the way that that's figured out through the courts. So it's a formula through the courts.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. So my question is that's what I thought. Of course, they're allocated by the judicial system, not by the legislature. But so my question is the formula going to be changed? I mean, do we know where the need is going to be? I mean, the need could be all over the state, and yet judicial units are only going to be allocated to one area. I guess that's my point. You don't need to yield. That's just my observation.
Further discussion, Senator Latz.
Madam President and members, I just want to highlight a few points. Right now, the law is working pretty well for 94% of the cases that don't go to a final judicial decision, where the parties are cooperative, where they are reasonable people, where they are loving and involved parents. A change in the law will impact that 94% significantly for the benefit, allegedly, of the other 6%, or as Senator Newman said, 1-6%. The best interests of the child standard is working well now for 94% of our residents. Why do we need to make a change that could disrupt their status, cause them to go back and renegotiate or litigate their agreements for allegedly a benefit to the remaining parents, the ones that are bitter, the ones that may be abusive, but for whom maybe the proof isn't enough for a judge to consider the presumption rebutted. Members, the Senator Jungbauer actually made the case why the Battered Women Coalition opposes this bill. If you know you'll get 50-50 time, you'll give up and do the right thing, he said. For a woman who's abused in an abusive family, and if she knows the presumption is 50-50, that she's not going to be able to get her children away from the abuser, she is less likely to leave. The closer you are to 50-50, if you're at 35% instead of 25%, the less likely the abused woman is to leave the abusive relationship. 65% of women killed by their spouses or partners were when they were leaving or getting divorced. This is a big issue for the protection of battered women members. We don't need to move the percentages in a direction that will place them at greater risk.
Senator Jungbauer on that.
Thank you, Madam President. I keep wondering why we're getting adrift. We are not changing the current standard of the best interest of the child. We are not getting into the section of the statutes that deal with battered women in endangerment. We're not taking anything away from the judge in terms of any of that. Though some would have you believe that dealing with this section of the law, that people are going to push it to the other section, there's no direct link or evidence that would prove anything of the sort.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam President. I would disagree with Senator Latz that the system is working. I think if you look at our dropout rates, if you look at the number of youth that who are living in poverty, who are ending up in our correction system, that we are seeing a population that is missing, in many cases, their fathers. And there have been many articles and many studies about something that's going on in our culture, that there are too many young men, particularly at-risk young men, that do not have strong fathers and strong male role models in their lives. So is this change going to be a panacea for that? Is this change going to right the ills of the broken-down family? And is this change going to reverse the effects of poverty and what happens with these families? No, I don't think so. But I do think that by making this change, we are sending the courts a message. And the message that we in the Minnesota legislature are sending the courts by making this change is that we take a stand for the importance of a mother and a father in their children's lives. And in any divorce, it is extremely painful, and both parents are very vulnerable in terms of dealing with the loss, the potential loss, of being with their children. A devastating thing for any family to go through. It is difficult in those vulnerable moments to be magnanimous and say, you know, I think I'm protecting my child, but who am I really protecting? You know, I think I'm doing what's best for my child, but am I in some cases protecting my own fears? And so with this law, I don't think we are making a major change because we preserve the protections that are there for women who are in domestic situations. We preserve the protections that allow the courts to make this determination, yet we're sending a very gentle message. We're going from 25% to 35% to let everyone know, including, by the way, those dads who perhaps ought to be doing more and being a stronger force in their children's lives. So we are saying, as Minnesota legislators, not as lawyers, and you know, Senator Latz is a very eloquent attorney, and we hear Senator Newman's words. Senator Newman tried to quote me, didn't ask me if he could quote me, so that's another point, but I did say those words in the Finance Committee, and it was difficult when I said them. But I did so, and I speak on this topic not because it's easy, but because I think it's important. I think it's very important that we do what we can to bring about balance so that mothers and fathers have equal access to raising their children, not because it's best for them, but because it's best for children.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to remind members, we've been hearing a lot about different stories that are out there, that if two p- people, if parents get along and want to set up a cooperative agreement, they can do 50%, 50%. I mean, they can do whatever they want. So that's already in law, that parents who cooperate, communicate, and domestic violence isn't an issue, they can set up whatever agreement they want. That's already there. What's in law is when parents cannot resolve their differences, when they can't get together, when they don't communicate, when there are issues in the marriage where they can't agree, then the courts have to step in. And so to set up a rebuttable presumption that requires certain parenting time that doesn't allow the courts to have the leeway that they need, we're already talking about situation where parents aren't communicating and aren't able to cooperate in these agreements. So when we have situations such as many of the examples that are given here where parents do cooperate, they can set up whatever agreement they want already. This is really about increasing the amount of time that parents who don't cooperate, who don't communicate, can see their kids, and we really need to leave that up to the courts. So I encourage you to not support this bill because it's not necessary. We already have the ability in our courts to do what needs to be done.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam President. It never ceases to amaze me that some people basically grew up in Candyland and they think everybody else did too, and that's just not the truth. It's so hard for sometimes people that grew up with stable, intelligent parents that didn't have any major hostilities when they divorced still think that that's maybe the way it is for everybody. Well, guess what? It's not. And with a bill like this, what we have is a lessening of the no-fault divorce laws, more fault in divorce, because if you are trying to get more time with your children or getting basically more time with your children just because some law we pass, then you're going to have the parents trying to prove more and more that the other one is unfit to have that kind of time. So, and who's the victim in all this? The victim is, of course, the children. And divorced parents do often use the children against each other, and the children are the ones that suffer. I truly think that it can't be done here in this legislature, that the court must make these decisions. And I'm not saying they do the right thing 100% of the time. They probably don't. But I've also heard of a lot of circumstances where there's judges in counties that make sure that the father gets 100% of the child care and so forth. So I think there's going to be money problems between those couples that are mandated to have 35% each. I think there's going to be a lot of fighting between those parents that are going to pick up and exchange their children more often during the week. I think that there's going to be a lot more children with problems when they are shoved back and forth to different households and possibly different schools during the week, different friends or no friends at all in one place and friends in another place. I don't think this is in the best interest of a child. I think stability is in the best interest of a child. And it's wonderful if two parents can get along and split their time up. I would encourage that for everybody. But when you look at some of these committee meetings, at some of the anger and the ire that's going on there, you just know what those kids are going through. You just know that there's a lot of hostility between those parents, and I don't think 35% or 10% more time is going to change that, quite frankly. I think they're going to have the opportunity to see each other and be angry and nasty with each other much more, and that may be a small percentage. But I would hope that the courts would do their job to make sure that the father or the mother, in whatever case it is, gets plenty of time with those children and gets plenty of days with those children if they are fit. If they are a fit parent, and there are plenty of times when I've known women that have had to run away from abusive husbands and not let them know where they are, and if they didn't abuse the children or whatever, they still get their time. to see that child, and that's bad. It's just plain bad. So, folks, you can live in candy land as long as you want to, but sometimes you get tired and decide you want something else to eat. So take a real good look at other people's lives and how some children in these situations are living.
Senator Ortman? Oh, Senator Latz.
Madam President, members, just one additional thought with all due respect to Senator Bonhoff. I don't think she was on a committee that heard the bill, but there actually is more than just a gentle message here in the bill. There actually is an addition in the guiding factors portion of the statute. Section 1 of the bill specifies, in addition to the factors that shall be used in making restraining orders, it specifically adds the presumption of minimum parenting time. So it inserts a greater percentage and that presumption into the judge's determination when deciding whether or not to issue a restraining order. That's a significant change, not just a gentle message to the courts or to the parents.
Senator Ortman.
Well, Madam President, I don't think that folks that agree with this bill live in Candyland, and I don't find that to be respectful. I think there are members of this body that have heard from constituents that are very concerned about what's been happening in our family courts. And I believe that members in this chamber are very compassionate and concerned about what's happening in family court. Members, just a couple of points. A presumption is not a hard and fast rule. It is a guiding factor. And judges are human. They're just like us. And in this case, it makes a lot of sense for us as lawmakers to set a presumption, a starting place for our courts, because we believe that parents having time with children and children having time with both parents is very important in our society. This bill is not about dads and it's not about moms. I've heard too many stories on both sides to think that this is going to have a disproportionate impact on moms or on dads. This is intended to have a starting place in our courts. The presumption can be overcome. I'm sure it will happen. But what we really want is for our judges, if they go beyond 35% and provide less time between a child and his or her parent, whether it be a mom or a dad, before doing that, before issuing that order, please, judge, think twice. Make sure you have a good reason to limit a parent and child's time to less than 35%. This is a very reasonable approach. This is perfectly appropriate for us as lawmakers, as a co-equal branch of government, to send that very strong message that there is an important starting place. Members, I think Senator Jungbauer and Senator Limmer and Newman and Senator Wolf especially for their very great efforts to bring this bill to a final vote. It has been a huge uphill challenge for all of them, and I appreciate all their work. I hope members will vote yes.
Secretary will give House File 322 its third reading.
House File Number 322, a bill for an act relating to family law, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 322. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 46 ayes and 19 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, moving back to second order of business, executive and official communications. Secretary will read the communication.
Dear Madam President, I have vetoed and am returning Chapter 291, Senate File 1755, a bill relating to state employee layoffs. Sincerely, Mark Dayton, Governor.
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that Senate File Number 1755 and the veto message thereon be laid on the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There is one to be read.
Senate File Number 2625, a bill for an act relating to education, introduced by Uyghur, Olson, Stumpf, Nelson, and Bonhoff. Referred to the Committee on Education.
Senate File 2625, first reading. It will be referred to the Committee on Education.
My fault.
Remaining under motions and resolutions, moving to the confirmation calendar. There are several confirmations we will take up. Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the reports from the Committee on Local Government and Elections reported April 3, 2012, pertaining to the appointments to the Metropolitan Council be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the foregoing reports be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you. I move that in accordance with the reports from the Committee on Local Government and Elections reported April 3, 2012, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of James Brimmeyer, Gary Cunningham, Harry Melander, Lona Schreiber, Gary Van Eyl, and Wendy Wolf.
To that motion, Senator Vanderveer.
I move that they now be confirmed.
Senator Vanderveer renews his motion. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions reverting to messages from the House, the Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee in House File Number 247 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee. So adopted, House File 247, a bill for an act relating to taxation. House File 247 is herewith transmitted to the Senate. Alvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Ortman.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File Number 247 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed and amended by the conference committee.
To that motion, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 247 was adopted in a conference committee this morning, members, and it's been posted for the allotted time. That's why we're here this evening, and I appreciate your coming in this evening. I know it was a hardship for many of you, and I appreciate your camaraderie and staying up with me through the night. Members, this is a very important bill. As you know, we passed Tax 1 off of the Senate floor in good faith with bipartisan support, and the governor vetoed that bill. But I am nothing if not persistent and determined. Senator Bach knows this. I'm determined. We need tax relief. Minnesotans have asked us to help them, their families and their businesses. They have been struggling through the economic recession. They need your help with a green vote tonight. Please don't take for granted the fact that you have the power to help them. And let's just talk about the relief that you as members have put into this bill. I think it's really important. Senator Saxhog, thank you for your contribution. The provision on nursing home bonds authorized for Itasca County, I think that's really important. Senator Saxhog, I hope you're going to vote yes. Senators Harrington, Pappas, Cohen, and McGuire, you all asked for bonding authority for the city of St. Paul to be extended until 2024. That's in this bill, and members Harrington, Pappas, Cohen, and McGuire, I sure hope you're going to vote for your city of St. Paul and put up a green vote. Senator Stumpf, and I know Senator Scoy also cares very much about the bovine tuberculosis property tax credit extension. Members, this is such a good bipartisan bill. I'm sure hoping you're going to help me get the governor's signature on this bill. Senator Stumpf, are you going to help? I think a green vote would help. Senator Scoy, it will help. Senator Stumpf, we had another provision for you in this bill, Marshall County, to allow certain homeowners in flooded areas to get homestead property status. Senator Stumpf, I sure hope we've earned your green vote for your community. I know Senator Metzen, he's given me the thumbs up. He likes it because I know we put a TIF provision in there for you too, Senator Metzen. And thank you for your vote last time. That meant a lot. I know that Senators Rest and Bonhoff and Wieger all voted yes too. Senator Scoy, we put the jobs bill for the governor in this bill, the Veterans Jobs Tax Credit, and the Minnesota Investment Fund, Senator Bach. We put that in here, $7 million. I know you were a very strong advocate. Wouldn't it be ironic if then you might advocate against the bill? Wouldn't that be a terrible use of authority around here? Senator Lori, last night you were very determined to pass a provision for the Sawyer Cemetery levy by Carlton County. That is in this bill, Senator Lori. I sure hope it has earned your yes vote. Senator Wieger has been as persistent as me in advocating for the City of Oakdale TIF provision. Senator Wieger's provision is in this bill. Congratulations, Senator Wieger. Thank you for all of your hard work. He's there this morning, too. Senator Eaton, your provision for the City of Brooklyn Park Aquaplex is in this bill. I sure hope you're going to vote for your own city, Senator Eaton. Mr. President, we also have the Cook Orr Hospital, a district levy authority in Senator Bach's district. He brought that to the committee, and the committee said yes. I sure hope Senator Bach is going to say yes to his provision. Senator Metzen, I know I can count on his vote. Senator Latz, economic development and property tax exemption extensions for Hopkins and St. Louis Park. Sure hope that I earn his support for his own provision. Senator Sparks, the City of Windham will benefit from a TIF extension in this bill. Members, we also had a lot of bipartisan support for an angel investment tax credit. We're going to add additional money to that in this bill. A research and development credit, a capital upfront equipment. I've been on the tax committee for far too long to think that that isn't a priority for members in this body, including Senator Tomasoni. I know that he worked on that provision for many years. So members, in addition, I got a couple other really good provisions that you might not have known about in this bill, but let me help you. Let me give you some good reasons to vote yes tonight and to tell the governor this is a good bill, Governor. Guess what else is in here? Student loans for 16,000 Minnesotans. Because of the tax-exempt bonds of the federal government, we passed the public finance bill. 16,000 students in Minnesota will get student loans if you vote yes on this bill. 1,000 new home buyers in the state of Minnesota will qualify for new home buying loans. We also have Small Business Administration loans. That will get expanded with a yes vote in this chamber. Members, in addition, we have the state general levy. Every business property taxpayer in your districts will benefit. And I don't know, frankly, how many more vacancy signs you want to see on Main Street in the small towns in Minnesota, but I sure hope we've turned the corner on that. And this bill will help. It will have a freeze of the state general levy or their business property taxes owed to the state of Minnesota when you vote yes on this provision. Members, if for no other reason, you should be voting yes on this bill because of the capital upfront equipment exemption. This has been a very high priority for the entire legislature, the tax committee, for many years. And we learned today in the tax conference committee that 14% of our manufacturers in the state of Minnesota would qualify for this point of sale tax exemption on their purchases and investment in capital equipment. And members, that will create a surge in orders, which will benefit not just the purchasers with the sales tax exemption, but the sellers as well. This one is a twofer. We get the purchaser and the seller, and all of the new economic activity that that would generate. Members, I could talk for hours about the very good things in this bill, but you know how hard we've worked to present this bill because your provisions are in it. Your contributions are in it. I know there's been some concern about the last bill in the veto. The governor was very specific about his concerns, and we have addressed his concerns. In particular, we cut the tails all the way down in the out biennium 2014-15 to what is effectively about $40 million. The bill, if you look at the spreadsheet, it shows about $73 million, but actually there's savings in our general fund in the out years because we didn't bond as much as the governor had budgeted. So in the tails, the impact is about $40 million. The governor himself agreed to $50 million to be taken out of the reserves to pay for the impacts of this bill in 2012 and 13, and we've kept the total for this bill under that $50 million. But together, we've already paid for this bill. The great businesses and individuals who pay property taxes, income taxes, and sales taxes in this great state of Minnesota have already provided the payment for this reinvestment. If you read the economic update from April, you'll see that we are ahead of our projections for November by $106 million. And as long as the economy doesn't shrink, this bill is paid for in this biennium and in the next biennium with a method for paying for it that the governor has already agreed to. So members, this bill is poised for a signature. Unless something else happened, what else might have happened? Members, I sure hope you'll vote for your own provisions, your own cities, your own communities, and the goals of the state of Minnesota. The residents here deserve your best on this bill. I ask you please to join me in voting yes on this bill.
Any further discussion on the Ortman motion? Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Ortman, you know, I guess I can understand after you put it to the businesses last year with your elimination of the homestead market value credit and then that cute little 90% exclusion that you feel you need to offer them some property tax relief this year. But, you know, that and all these member provisions, you probably owed it to the body to ask the Commissioner Franz to come to the table and give you some advice as to what the governor's position was on that, because I think he's been pretty clear that with deficit spending that's in this bill, he's not going to be supportive of that. And, you know, you went down this list of members' initiatives, and that's one thing that the tax bill is. It's always full of members' provisions that are important to their community. And you're putting all those at risk with the deficit spending that you have in this bill. And I know you just said it was all paid for, but Senator Ortman, when the tails are negative, that means you're spending more than you took in the deficit spending is occurring. Now, as I was walking by one of the televisions this afternoon, I try not to watch the House. While it is entertaining, it's frustrating too. But I did happen to just see Representative Benson on the TV, and he asked the question that I've been asking all along, and he asked, you know, we're not arguing about these provisions, I mean, worthwhile or not, but how do you pay for them? You've got spending in this bill, and how do you pay for it? And how do you do that and be fiscally responsible? And all I heard was all this yada-ya about jobs, and more jobs, and we're all going to support jobs, and we got job creators, and but nobody's stepping up to the plate and answering how you're going to pay for this stuff. And these businesses that we're concerned about, they know that you can't continue to do deficit spending like this. It doesn't work. So you take the money from the reserves to pay for it, and that just affects the ability to pay back the school shift. The reserves, when they're filled up, the extra money then goes to the school shift. So the net effect of what you're doing with this is delaying the payback of the school shift. I've heard discussions, Senator Ortman, you're talking about this phantom surplus that the state has. You cannot have a surplus at the same time you're deficit spending. That doesn't work that way. So what's going on? You begin your budget cycle this last year ago, and we borrowed $3.8 billion, some of it from the schools, some of it from tobacco appropriation bonds, down the line. Then you go through the budget year or biennium for the state, and you pay your bills, and you get your revenues, and you do what you do as a business or a state, and you get to the end, and for the state's example, it's forecast to have $1.3 billion left after we go through the biennium, and you're calling that a surplus. You're conveniently forgetting the $3.8 billion of borrowing that isn't paid back. So if you're going to go into the next biennium, you're going to have to borrow some more. This is what people are talking about when they're talking about concern about the state's fiscal house not being in order. And it needs to be fixed. And you're making the problem worse with this bill because there's $73 million of deficit spending in the tails. It just seems to me that we need to stop this. We need to, if we're going to do spending, pay for it. And I heard somebody say that, well, it's hard to do a tax bill without having tails. Well, if you're going to do spending in the tax bill, there's a couple of ways around it. You can either cut some of the spending, or you can raise some revenue. But it has to be done permanently, not one time. So I'd ask the members to not support this bill. I know there's a lot of stuff in it that many of us have worked for. But Senator Ortman, Commissioner Franz should have come to the table and given you some advice about what the governor was willing to sign. And it seems to me that the process would have been better, and maybe some of these members' provisions could have been enacted into law.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to talk about a provision in this bill, and as many of you know, I'm not on the tax committee, and I don't claim to know all the intricacies of everything in this bill. I think it is a good bill, and I think we should pass it. We just passed a bill last night that spent, $500 million? I think we can pass this bill. But there is a provision in the bill that I want to make sure members are aware of, and it's a small provision. It has to do with the sales tax exemption for nonprofit nursing homes. And nursing homes are nonprofit. But what's happened is that when there's a change in ownership, they have to reapply to the department to retain their nonprofit status. But we have a law in Minnesota, the rate equalization law, that prohibits nursing homes from demonstrating that they're offering lower prices to anybody. So they don't qualify. They can't show that they're offering something for free or at a lower cost. And so the department now is interpreting that to say, well, now you're going to have to pay taxes. So right now there are a couple of nursing homes that have been affected, and one of them is in Buffalo Lake, which I think, Senator Conan, that's your area, that they're in financial jeopardy. They might even have to close their doors. I don't know. But I know there are a couple right now that are in jeopardy, and there's going to be more next year if this bill doesn't pass. And I know, Senator Bach, you carried a very similar provision, I think exact same language, to deal with property tax exemption a couple of years ago. But this is going to not happen, apparently, if people on the other side of the aisle decide, well, we just don't want to have this bill. It's more important that we make a political point. It's more important that we spend $500 million over here for a stadium than it is to do something to help people and to help nursing homes and the other good things that are in this bill. So I just think that people should think about that. This is a good bill. There's lots of things in here that are good for a lot of people in this state. And I just want to try to make it clear that we can pass this bill and we can all ask the governor to sign the bill, or we can say, well, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to pass a stadium bill, but we're not going to pass anything else. We're not going to pass any tax provisions. We're not going to pass anything that might help a nursing home. We're not going to do any of that. We'll pass a stadium bill. And we'll go home and we'll say, that's what we did. And if the nursing homes go out of business because they can't pay their taxes, well, that's just too bad. That's how it works. We have a deal. We're going to pass stadium bills. We're not going to do this. So, members, I just think, take a look what's in the bill. It's a good bill. It's got good provisions in it. This is one in particular that I'm concerned about. I'm not sure why it has to even be this way. I'm not sure why the department has to look at this and say, well, we're going to make you change your status because you've changed ownership from being nonprofit to for-profit. I don't know why that's happening, but apparently it is. And this is the way to fix it. It's in the bill. It's not a big provision. I don't think it even costs that much in the bill. It's about, what, $10,000 or $11,000. But it's going to go away. So, members, I urge you to support the bill.
Senator Obley.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. On Monday night, when we passed the bonding bill, we did save some money. In fact, something that has been overlooked is that the tails from not passing a $775 million bonding bill, as the governor was proposing, is that in the next biennium, we will save $35 to $36 million. So that's some of the tails money. It's about half of what we're looking at in this tax bill. So there is additional revenue that will be in there to help take care of this as well. But members, I just want to remind you that, you know, we pass things like the bonding bill, and a lot of people call that a jobs bill. But this is a jobs bill, too. Some people say it's not going to create the jobs that you think it will because business owners will just pocket the savings. But I would disagree. I think this is a jobs bill because it saves jobs. Even if it doesn't create jobs, it can save some of these small businesses. And they are the ones providing jobs for us. We heard Senator Olson talk so eloquently about the Maya Village and the costs of their property taxes. And a large part of that is because of the statewide business property tax, which we are freezing for just one year now in this bill. It used to be, it was going to continue to be frozen longer than that, but 1 year now. But that little business is just hanging on by its fingernails. And what are they going to do? We can't keep adding to their tax burden. And so for 1 year, we're going to say, well, I guess we're not going to add to it. We're not taking anything away, but we're not going to add to it. And so, members, you know, it might save little businesses like that who are just hanging on by their fingernails. And they do employ people at those little businesses. Or whether it's a sales tax exemption or any of these things that are going to help these businesses survive. And also sometimes even help businesses that are trying to decide where to locate. if they're going to open a new facility. We have to be competitive. That's how we retain and grow jobs in this state. So please support the bill.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Ortman would have been disappointed if I didn't get up, I'm sure. And Senator Ortman has, Senator Ortman, you've done a good job compiling a bill that's got a lot of members' stuff in it. In fact, I'm looking at page 9 of the spreadsheet, and just on page 9, I think I can count provisions for 20 members of the Senate. Provisions that are very important back in our communities. Our communities sent us a letter or a resolution asking us to pass some special legislation for them that they need to make their community work better. And I know Senator Ortman has learned in her time as the tax chair, one of the things kind of exciting about the tax committee is, and members, I'll always remember going to a I think they called it a demolition party rather than a groundbreaking in Oakdale and Tanner Lake, Senator Wieger's district. It was in September. And that spring earlier, we had passed a large tax bill, over 400 pages. Senator Ortman, a lot like yours that's 212, but twice as big, with a lot of stuff in it for members. And I remember the city of Oakdale asked me to speak. I had gone to Oakdale before the session ever started to take a look at their project so I could, as the tax chair, understand what kind of special tax increment financing provisions they needed. And as I was waiting in the parking lot for the event to start, because I got there a little early, I had the tax bill in my back seat and I took a look. And Senator Wieger's provision was 8 lines. 8 lines, members. And a podium was set up. The community was there. They had sandwiches. They had little bricks wrapped in cellophane, little pieces of the old Blackie's Bar that they were going to demolish, and the city was going to redevelop this property. And Senator Ortman, that's one of the neat things about being the tax chair. And I stood up to the podium, and they were videotaping it for their local cable channel, and the whole community was so excited. And I felt like I was part of it. And it was 8 lines in a 400-page bill. And that's one of the things, members, that tax chairs get an opportunity to do, help communities do things like redevelopment. And there's a lot of those kind of provisions in here for members. And I know, Senator Ortman, you've learned over your 2 years chairing the tax committee how kind of exciting that is to feel like somehow you played a little part in something very exciting for a community. But members, Senator Ortman has been in the meetings with me in the governor's office, and the governor's position has been very clear. We have a $1.1 billion deficit in the next biennium, and he's not going to sign a bill that adds to it, because the certainty is he's going to be here. He's the one certainty. Many of us probably won't be, maybe myself included. But he will be here, and we'll have to assemble a budget to send to the next legislature, and he's not going to make the job any harder than it already is. Senator Ortman, I know you've heard that over and over from him. And Senator Ortman, I know you understand how important these provisions are to the members of the Senate. Senator Roebling, you know that the 30-some million dollars that we're trying to score against the deficit spending in this bill, you know that when the November forecast is issued, that if that money exists, it's going to go to schools. It's going to go to pay back the school shift. Any money on the bottom line goes to pay back schools, so we all know that. So in addition to the $30 to $35 million that Senator Roebling talked about that's going to pay for this bill, the truth is when the November forecast comes out, it's going to go to pay back schools. The $27.9 million that's being spent in here out of the budget reserve, if this bill is signed into law, won't be available to be paid back to schools. So Senator Ortman, You and I both know that this bill's not going to get enacted into law, and I know many of you in the room are kind of concerned about that now, and I know when I drive home over the years as I've driven north home, it's hard when you live in rural Minnesota. We have a little different experience once the session adjourns because we get in our car to take the long drive home, and Senator Sump has the longest drive. And over those hours, you think about the months that you are away from home living in St. Paul and all the things your communities asked you to do. And what could I have done to been a, where was I successful? What could I have done to be a little bit more successful for the people that I represent? And that's always kind of an emotional time as you're kind of coming down from the session. My disappointment tonight, Senator Ortman, is we're not going to get this member's work done. Because we all know where this bill is headed. It's not going to get enacted into law. But members, I have a little secret for you. Senator Ortman knows how important these provisions are to all of us here. And members, I bet you're going to get another vote tonight yet. I'll bet there's another house file. And I'll bet you're going to get a chance to get those provisions for your communities enacted into law. Because I know Senator Ortman knows how important it is to all of you. And I know she wants you to get the work done for your communities, because I know she takes her job very seriously. So, Senator Ortman, I appreciate all the work that you've put into the committee. I was disappointed that the Commissioner of Revenue wasn't even invited to testify on the conference committee report. So I guess he never got an opportunity to tell you how the governor felt about it, but members, you're going to get another chance before the night's over, I think, because I know Senator Ortman knows how important the provisions are to you and your communities.
Senator Ortman.
Well, Mr. President, I think I'll begin with the end. I think maybe Senator Bach has another secret. I don't know about another bill coming from the House, but I think Senator Bach knows why this bill might be headed for a veto. But I ask you to support it anyway because it's the right thing to do. Let's just be really clear, Senator Bach and members. Commissioner Franz was invited to the conference committee this morning. He's been invited all along. And when we had meetings scheduled with the governor, guess who didn't show up? Governor Dayton. And who was in his place? Senator Bach and a minority leader from the House. So this game, it's been played by the governor and the leaders. It's just playing out in this chamber right now, but I believe Senator Bach may have other secrets. But I'm going to continue to do the right thing and take up this bill in a straightforward manner and ask members to vote for what is the compilation of all of our work and all of our efforts over the last year. Members, let's be really clear. This bill will cost about $40 million in the out years in the next biennium. And Senator Hahn is right. A $500 million project just happened to get in the way and might have something to do with the governor's intention, or so-called intention, to veto this bill. Members, Representative Davids called the $73 million entails a rounding error. $40 million in the out years. And let's just talk about where that $40 million offset by the savings and bonding is going. $3.3 million for the Jobs Veterans Tax Credit. Please don't vote no against veterans. The R&D Tax Credit. Members, that will make Minnesota more competitive for investments. $6.3 million. Eliminating the refund for the capital equipment for businesses with 50 employees or less, $12.5 million. The data center sales tax exemption for refurbished facilities, $6.1 million.
and the one-year freeze is calculated at $36.8 million. That total $73 million total cost entails. And members, Senator Bach has said one thing, but the facts are otherwise. When we started talking about tails in the out years, we had a bill that was $193 million in tails. And in our negotiations, the governor said, Senator Ortman, we will agree with $50 million in tails. We couldn't agree, so we came up with $143 million, which was a compromise of $50 million. We brought it down $50 million, and we submitted that bill, believing fully that the governor could sign it. But he vetoed it. So we went back to the drawing board. But the governor's $50 million evaporated when Senator Bach walked in the room, and all of a sudden the governor wouldn't agree to $50 million in tails. All of a sudden, governor wasn't there, and we heard zero. So we went back to the drawing board. We submitted our bill. And then one of the facts that Senator Bach has left out here is what the governor said when he vetoed the bill. When he vetoed the bill, he said he could compromise on the tails. He said half. So members, half of 143, 73 million. And we've also banked some savings from the bonding bill. This is a very fair approach. We have an awful lot of support for this bill, not just in this room, but from the business community, from folks all across the state of Minnesota, the Minnesota High Tech Association, the commercial property owners. Folks are working hard to contact the governor. Small business owners who need this relief are contacting the governor, and I hope you will too. Send a message to the governor that we want him to sign this bill because it would be good for Minnesota.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I just appreciate the comments by Senator Ortman. And I just want to remind members that, a week or so ago, we passed a Health and Human Services finance bill unanimously in this body, which people have told me has never happened in anybody's memory. And that had about $23 million in tails. And I didn't hear anything when we had that debate about the concern about money in the out years being spent and how that was going to be a huge problem and how that was just insurmountable to get anything done. And that bill was signed by the governor. And I don't understand why, I guess I do understand why this bill is in jeopardy. And I think that's just not right. There are a lot of good things in this bill. And I'm particularly interested, as I said before, that this provision for the nursing homes gets addressed. And the fact that there's another big thing out there, the stadium thing, where we all spent $500 million, and apparently that means that we're not going to do anything else. And I just think that is unfortunate, and I hope the people of Minnesota are watching this. That there's a lot of good things in this bill that are going to get thrown away because we've decided we're just not going to do anything more. The politics are going to surpass the judgment on policy. We're going to make up excuses. Members, we should pass this bill.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. President, will Senator Bach yield?
Senator Bach will yield. Senator Ortman.
Senator Bach, I trust you to be as concerned about these districts and their projects as I am. I trust that you care about the state of Minnesota and its future. I trust that you care that small businesses will have an opportunity to grow and hire new people. I trust all that. My question for you is, Senator Bach, you say you have a secret that there's another bill coming. What makes you believe there's another bill coming? Can you inform us about that? Because I'm not aware of any other bill coming. And I think before we vote on this bill, we should know whether the House really is crafting another bill that will address all of the projects that we've talked about tonight. I think that's a fair question.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Ortman, I don't know what the bill number is. I don't know what the House is up to. I just know, Senator Ortman, that you would not take all these provisions in 212 pages that are important to members of the Senate and let the last word be a veto. You're a better tax chair than that, and you take your job more seriously than that. So I just have to believe, Senator Ortman, knowing you and knowing you take your job seriously, that there is another bite at the apple before this day is done.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe we're in the 118th legislative day, Mr. President. Is that correct?
You're correct, Senator Ortman.
Members, I tell you now, I'm not aware of another bill on its way. This is your last chance, as far as I know. Now, maybe Senator Bach has more secrets, but as far as I know, this is the last chance you are going to have to send a message to the governor that you want him to enact the provisions in this bill that will help your community and your businesses and the folks that are employed by those businesses. So please do the right thing and vote yes.
Any more discussion? Senator Olson.
Mr. President, I wasn't going to speak because I appreciate the comments that Senator Roebling made, but I can't resist because I think the governor's got a heart for our small businesses. I know his background comes from and his wealth comes from a big business that we all have valued over the years. But the small businesses are the ones that are going to be affected, and I particularly appreciate that even in the effort to cut the tails, you've at least kept the freeze of the statewide property tax on for 1 year. In the governor's veto message, he said that that freeze, you know, not a cut, just a freeze, was going to cost the state over $2 billion. Over a period of approximately 10 years. Where does that $2 billion come from? That's how much the tax increase that a freeze was preventing for our small businesses around the state. And as several have said, these are the people that would like to stay in business, be able to support their families, and provide jobs for others. And I have a hard time believing that the governor would veto this over the $36 million, I believe, that this results in some savings, not allowing that kind of an increase in the next year, in these troubled times, on our small businesses. So I do hope that the governor will think twice before he would veto this bill on that basis.
Senator Bach.
Senator Olson and members, much has been made out of the business, the state general tax that businesses pay. And I want to share just a little bit of history with you that I haven't shared with you yet this session about that tax and why in 2001 the business community signed off and said, yes, we think that's fair. We think it's fair that the business community pay something to the state's general fund. And when it was initially passed, the state general tax at $542 million was committed to be spent on K-12 education. We later changed that, but members, you know why? Who's committed to schools? Senator Olson, you know why that state general tax was committed to schools? And the tax committee members in this room know this, because commercial industrial property doesn't pay voter-approved levies for schools. When our citizens go out and vote to put more money into their local school district, all that commercial industrial property pays nothing. And the entire burden of voter-approved levies falls on the homeowner. It wasn't that way prior to 2001. Prior to 2001, we had a general education levy that all property paid into the K-12 school system. But we undid that in 2001, and the business community signed off on it because they didn't have to pay voter-approved levies anymore. And they don't pay them now. The result of that is homeowners today are paying, I believe, somebody could correct me if I'm wrong, if I get the number exactly wrong, something north of $2 billion a year to K-12 schools in the form of voter-approved levies. And the commercial industrial property pays zero, nothing. Members, that is why the business community signed off on the statewide business tax in 2001. They got a really, really good deal. And I really don't understand the obsession that some members of the Senate have had with that state general tax that we enacted in 2001. Because the business community got a really, really good deal. That's why they took it. And it's put a really, really heavy burden on homeowners. And that's why you're hearing from homeowners about the escalating property taxes that they are seeing. Because as we've put no money into the K-12 formula, or almost none, over the last decade, and there's been more and more reliance on voter-approved levies to fund schools, all of it has fallen on the homeowner because the commercial industrial property owner no longer pays it. So members, and Senator Olson, I just rise to explain that to everybody, to people that weren't here in 2001, why the business community signed off. And I believe that next year, kind of no matter who's back here, we're going to do a pretty comprehensive tax reform proposal. And I believe that this state general tax that some people now dislike so much is one of the things that's going to be put on the table and we're going to have a discussion about. And maybe when we all sit down, those of us that are here, and we kind of look at all the different pieces of Minnesota's tax system, maybe that we find out that that state general tax is something that should be reconsidered, and maybe the business community would rather have that eliminated completely, and maybe they'd rather go back to a general education levy like we had prior to 2001. Those are the kind of things I think are going to be considered next year when the state enters into, I believe, what will be a significant tax reform proposal in front of all of us.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I am aware of how that came to be. I was here. But not having to pay the voter-approved levies, those levies are based on per pupil dollar amounts that are spread across the tax base. What we're talking about here is not what that original deal was. It's the automatic inflator. It's the automatic inflator that has driven that dollar amount from 500 and some million up to 800 and some million a year. And well, yes, there needs to be discussion as to whether that should continue, whether our property tax should be the means requiring businesses to contribute money to whatever in the general fund now rather than just to education. But the reality is we're just trying to freeze this and freeze it for 1 year. I do hope that the governor understands that and that he believes that this is an important enough measure to keep our small businesses going during this time, that he would sign this bill and agree to this. I think he's got enough heart for that.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I don't think there's anyone on the floor who enjoys the Senator Bach tax history lesson than myself. And I will miss those, Senator Bach. Next year, but I I do need to rise and make a point or two. You know, members, I hope we are on the end of a recession. I hope we're at the beginning of a recovery. But what we offer to small businesses, what we offer to a job creator today has to be better than, hey, you got a really good deal back in 2001. We've got to offer them a little something better than, well, if you just wait till next year, there's going to be comprehensive tax reform. Can you just wait a little longer? Can you just expand your business here in Minnesota based on some tax changes we made 11 years ago? That's not a winning sales message to job creators these days. We don't have a 21st century tax structure. We do need major tax reform, but we need to expand and grow our private sector economy today. We need to start this yesterday. And we need a governor who's going to sign tax relief. We need a governor who's going to make it a little less costly to do business here in Minnesota. A cold state. We don't have an ocean. Our message to the world just cannot be wait around for tax reform. Our message to the world cannot be, hey, you got a really good deal 11 years ago. So Senator Ortman this morning, brings a compromise to the floor. I mean, Senator Ortman, where did our tax relief go? It went on a severe diet, and now we have just a two-year freeze. I mean, we're now down to making really just some symbolic attempts to say, come to Minnesota. We want you here. We want you to grow here. Bring your idea. Bring your employees. Bring your capital. Bring your innovation here, because we treasure that. We want you to be part of a growing, thriving economy. We've got to give people some reasons to choose Minnesota. And now we're down to a really small one. I think it's significant enough. I hope the governor will sign it.
Senator Peterson.
Members, I hope you're getting the message that a red vote is something you should be taking a serious look at and consideration. You know, I'm not real political. In fact, the first time, some of you know, the first time I ever walked into a local caucus was about 2 years ago this time of the year. And I asked for the endorsement for the party that I ran for and was fortunate enough to get it. What's been going on in this economy the last 4 years is that business income has been plummeting. Business sales, gross sales, have been plummeting. But yet, the business property tax that has dominated much of this conversation that we've been having tonight, members, has been going up on an average of 4 to 6% every year. While the businesses in this state have seen their sales on average drop somewhere in the neighborhood of 30%, if you're involved in the construction industry, many businesses have seen their gross sales cut in half to 50%. Members, if you think of your own situation, your own family budget as a business, and imagine that income going down 30% or 50%, and how you would react and what you'd have to do. Well, members, what some of these businesses have been doing on main streets all across your communities, I hope you've taken the time to talk to them about this, because you know what they've been had to do? They've had to reduce wages. They've had to cut overtime. They've had to reduce contributions to their 401ks for their staff. They've had to cut features from their health benefit packages in order to provide an affordable health benefit package for the percentage that the businesses pay, as well as the percentage that their employees pay. Our staff members have lost their uniform allowances. They lost their allowances for safety equipment. They've seen reductions in their mileage reimbursements decrease. because businesses are put in a position because they don't have the sales and they don't have the income to pay these benefits, but yet our statewide business property taxes continue to go on up as our economy's declined. Members, we're asking in this bill, which has caused some of the tales that have dominated so much discussion, is 1 year to stay the same. And then in the second year, you know what? It's going to go up 4 to 6% again. We're asking for 1 year of relief to a fixed business expense that's gone up on a regular basis since 2001 with no end in sight. So what happens if these businesses make more money, members? These benefits are going to come back to the staff. Their wages are going to come back. Their overtime is going to come back. Their health and wellness reimbursements are going to come back, as well as features to their health and benefit packages. I understand if you have a pension, or maybe if you've been in this building too long, you're not sensitive to some of those situations. But the bottom line is, when these businesses make money, it's going to go directly to the staff and the benefits that they receive. Oh yeah, there's some bad apples we've heard about, and they're talked about oftentimes in committee and in this chamber. Those business owners are going to keep those dollars and those profits for themselves. Well, you know what? If they choose to do that, they're going to pay more income tax. Members, that's what's happened this past year. As we've seen wages begin to come back, we've started to see business come back, we've seen income started to rise a little bit because people are making more money, and you know what? We pay more income tax, and we begin to see the projections of the surpluses that we see now coming. And I think they're going to continue, and this is just one measure that we can do to help support that and bring it back. Members, not supporting this bill tonight is going to be a mistake, and you will think about it on your drive home, as some members have suggested, and you're going to wish you would have supported this.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Peterson, I appreciated your comment about Main Streets. I know what that is. Most of the communities I have in my district probably have a street called Main Street. And there's a lot of little storefronts on them, not unlike other rural districts. Members, I just want to tell you how much tax relief we're talking about for Main Streets. Because I talked with Department of Revenue this morning about how the tax relief in this bill on the state general tax, the freeze, how much tax savings is that going to be for a commercial property on Main Street? So members, just so you, those of you that are rural, be careful. Be careful with some of the rhetoric about people want to help your Main Street. Now, I've gone through an awful lot, Senator Senjamin Rosen and I, Senator Reinert today, dealing with a football field. But here's what I think I remember I heard from the Department of Revenue this morning. I think I got it right. That a $150,000 building, a building appraised at $150,000 on one of our main streets, members, you know how much their property taxes are going to go down because of the provision in this bill? $27, members. $27. That's it. I want to help Main Streets too, but Main Streets can be helped next year when we look at comprehensive tax reform. They're not going to be helped by a freeze in this that gives one of our little Main Street businesses with a $150,000 building $27. Because members, the money goes to the big guys with the big buildings and the tall buildings, to the corporate bottom lines outside of this state. That's where all the money in this bill goes. It doesn't go to our Main Streets. $27 to some little mom-and-pop business with a hardware store with a $150,000 building. That's what they're going to get. I just want you to know what they're going to get. That's all.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I appreciate Senator Olson's comments. I think she's right. I think the governor cares about the state, these small towns. these small businesses and the employees and all those that are unemployed who are looking for any hope of a job. This bill creates that hope and it creates an opportunity. And maybe it's $27 at a time, but then add in the rest of the relief in this bill, Senator Bach. Excuse me. Senator Bach is one of the best orators in the Senate. I have great admiration for how he presents his arguments. They're very cogent. He's got a very good flair for the argument. But in this particular instance, this is important, members, the whole premise behind his last argument was wrong. The commercial and industrial properties in the state of Minnesota are not exempt from the school referendums. Minnesota Statutes 126C.01 Subdivision 3. Our agricultural and our seasonal property owners are exempt. But our business property taxpayers are not exempt. And so they pay city taxes. They pay school district taxes. They pay county taxes. They pay metropolitan council taxes. And I have a little bit to add to the history lesson from 2001. Not because I was here, but because we had, I think, 5 hours of education finance lessons in the tax committee, and I learned an awful lot about what Senator Olson and Senator Stumpf have been working on, and the members in the tax in the education committee have been working on. And here's what I learned about that. In 2001, under Governor Jesse Ventura, the legislature decided that the school district levies should be reduced, and the businesses in the state of Minnesota should pay into the state general fund. This is what was created as the state general levy that we're talking about today. And the governor and the legislature, in their wisdom, thought that if the businesses paid into the state, then the state could provide more assistance across the state to all the schools. Seemed like a good deal, right? Well, the property or the school levies went down. The businesses started to pay in. Their burden was $541 million back then. But guess what? Our business property taxpayers got the worst of both worlds. Because beginning in 2002, the school levies began to go back up. And they still had to pay those commercial and industrial property taxpayers. Remember, I read the statute. They had to pay the city, the county, and the school district. And as those school levies went back up, the commercial and industrial property taxpayers paid in. And guess what else? The inflator caused them to have to pay more in the state general levy in addition. So as the school levies went up, the state general levy also automatically inflated whether the value of the property went up or not, and it automatically inflated 4 to 5%. And so what was a payment by our businesses of $541 million at that time has ballooned to $817 million in this year. And so the freeze would be at $817 million. We would freeze it for 1 year. And a hiatus in the increase for 1 year. That's what we're talking about here. It's a good faith down payment to our businesses to say, we are going to work very hard to reduce your property taxes so you don't have to pay the increases all the time in the school districts and the cities and the counties and the Metropolitan Council and all the special taxing districts and also increases in the state general levy. We're not going to leave you holding the bag on both. We're not going to leave you in this situation where you get the worst of both worlds. Every single year, we're going to freeze you one time. But members, please don't lose sight. This bill is not about the state general levy and the one-year freeze. It's also about the capital upfront equipment. It's about the angel investment tax credit that will encourage other businesses from outside of the state to invest here. And the data center refurbishment and historic tax credit that will encourage folks to come and invest in the state of Minnesota, to loosen up some of the cash that businesses are hoarding and are afraid to invest. They need a tax climate in the state of Minnesota that will encourage that investment. We're making that down payment today to say, you can invest here. We're going to have a tax climate that will be more business friendly. We get it. We know that our business tax climate in the state of Minnesota is the 45th worst in the nation, and we are committed to making it better. Members, vote for the businesses. Vote for new investments in the state of Minnesota. Vote for the projects in your district. Vote for the cities that have asked you to help them. And vote for the people of Minnesota that want hope and opportunity that there might be a new job for them around the corner.
Senator Ortman renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 247 be now adopted.
Madam President, before she does that.
Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President, Senator Ortman, you know, I'm just confused here. You've been talking now for the last hour or so about how good your tax bill is, and most of it is pretty good. I got to agree to that. But you know when you put it together, the governor is going to veto it. Why would you bring it back to the floor and send the veto beat bill to the governor's desk when there's so many good things in here for so many members in here? I don't understand why there isn't $52 million in tails like the governor said he would agree to, as opposed to the $73 million that he's going to veto. I'm completely confused why this was not just 2 + 2 = 4. Do it the way the governor said. He obviously wasn't bluffing. He vetoed one bill already. And I just can't understand, Senator Ortman, why you would bring this back to the floor and send it to the governor at this late hour when you know it's going to be vetoed. And there's so many members here that have very important provisions in this bill to their districts. I'm completely confused by this movement.
Senator Ortman.
Very briefly, Madam President, there is so much compromise in this bill, and we took to heart, Senator Tomasoni, everything that the governor would share with us about his intentions. This is our good faith effort to secure his signature, and I sure hope you will help to secure that signature. Every member in this chamber has some ability to influence and persuade the governor. I hope that you won't fall down on the job and fail to do your part to carry this through to signature.
Senator Ortman renews her motion. The foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 247 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. The secretary will give House File 247 its third reading.
House File Number 247, a bill for an act relating to taxation, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 247. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 41 ayes and 24 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, it's been a long day. I think time to go home. Senate Republicans, rather than to caucus tonight, will do so at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning in room 318. And with that, Madam Chair, I would now move that we do adjourn until May 10th, which is today, at 9 a.m.
Before that, Senator Bach, I just have a few excuses. Without objection, the following members will be excused. Senator Pappas from 1 to 2:20, Senator Latz and Senator Torres-Ray from 1 o'clock to 2:25, Senator Hayden from 1 o'clock to 2:25, Senator Bach, Senator Cohen, Goodwin, Ingebrigtsen, Kielash, Langseth, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, and Sparks from 1 o'clock to 2:35, Senator Chamberlain from 10:15 to the end of session, and Senator Rosen from 10:30 to 10:45. Without objection, they are excused. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Senjum, I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to come over and talk to you before you made your motion on when to reconvene, but I think the conference committee report on the stadium facility didn't actually get posted until about 12:30, so I think we actually can't take it up until after sometime after noon tomorrow. So I'm just wondering if we have other business we're going to do at 9 o'clock until noon, or are we going to come in here at 9 and end up recessing for 3 or 4 hours until we actually can take the stadium facility bill up? So if we have other business to do, that's fine. If not, it seems like we've had a couple pretty long days. We ought to let members and staff sleep in if we could, if we don't actually have some business to do it promptly at 9 o'clock. Madam President, the thought was to come in at 9, convene, take up the stadium proposal, not vote on it until the due time. Madam President, if that doesn't meet with the rules, we can certainly adjust our time frames here. But that was the intent going forward, not to vote until after, I think, at 11:53.
Senator Senjum renews his motion. The Senate adjourn until Thursday, May 10th at 9 a.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
We are adjourned.